105 Drive with Julian Clover. Cambridge
105. Cambridge 105, community radio in your city. That's Liberty X, Got to Have Your Love. It's a beautiful afternoon. There's quite a bit of cloud cover around, creeping over the Mill Road Cemetery. But other than that, it's rather nice, full of sunshine. And that's a good start for the 50th Cambridge Folk Festival. And at Cherry Hinton Hall for us is Mandy Morton this afternoon. Hello, Mandy.
Hello there, Julian.
So, I presume you have the same sunshine that we do. But what else is happening around you?
We absolutely do. In fact, you couldn't have asked for a more glorious evening to start the 50th anniversary festival. Folks are arriving in their droves at the moment. And of course, actually, Thursday night is one of the nicest times because it gives you an opportunity to have a really good walk around the festival. You're not queuing for anything. Everybody is in a very lovely, jovial mood. All the shorts are clean. All the kids are looking sparkly. Everyone is absolutely raring to go for the music to begin. An awful lot of the music at the moment, looking round, I'm right in front of Main Stage 1, which, of course, will be impossible for the rest of the weekend for me to stand in this position because I shall be absolutely knee-deep in people. But just now, I can see a number of people getting out their guitars and banjos, and there's a mandolin over there. The thing about Cambridge is that it's not just all about what happens on the stage. A lot of people will bring their tin whistles and everything else with them, or even buy them here at the festival. And I think an awful lot of bands are formed here, right out in front of Main Stage 1, never mind the professionals.
Yeah, you kind of see these impromptu performances, don't you, which are sort of just dotted around the festival site. And for, you know, they could very well be people who are going to be playing the main stage later, or they might be somebody who's decided to bring their guitar along.
Absolutely. I think that's a tradition here at Cambridge, and it's one that they're very keen to keep because there are now these days a number of stages. Main Stage 1, of course, is the biggie. Main Stage 2 isn't too bad. And then there are a number of smaller stages. The Club Tent, of course, is very famous for putting quite well-known bands together. I mean, Steel Eyes Fan discussed putting themselves together many years ago in that particular Club Tent. The Artist Bar is also a very good place. It's a sort of a bit of a hallowed ground place for people to meet up and suddenly decide they need a bass player or a drummer or what have you. So it really is a wonderful place for musicians to meet up and talk with other musicians. And as far as the crowds are concerned, out and about, they do get an opportunity to see some of the finest folk rock and country rock in the whole world.
We've got 4 days of festival ahead of us. Who are you particularly looking forward to seeing?
I'm looking forward to seeing Sinead O'Connor. I think she's my wild card for this year because, I mean, she's had a sort of a speckled history. Everyone remembers her for her really big hit, Nothing Compares to You. She is a fascinating Irish artist, and I am very keen to see her performing live. Never have seen her before, so that will be a treat for me, and I hope that she does really well here. There's a lot of pressure on artists that actually come to play Cambridge because there are those that just close their eyes and get up there and do their stuff, and there are others that worry about it for 6 months before they get here because it is so prestigious. And most artists, if you ask them, if they're completely honest with you, it's an absolute delight to have Cambridge on their sort of CV. Essentially, if you've got the Cambridge Folk Festival down, then you've nailed it.
We've been listening to your news report during the day, and there's mention of, I think it's £15 that was paid to Paul Simon at the very first folk festival. And I asked Jake to look up how much that is. And how much is it altogether, Jake, in current currency?
Current inflation, we reckon about £265 by today's standards.
£265. That actually is still quite a bargain.
It is a bargain for considering what happened to him. I mean, there is a wonderful story, if we've time, surrounding that £15, because it wasn't quite as simple as that. Ken Woolard, who, of course, is the father of the Folk Festival and started it all those years ago, he had already set into motion the Folk Festival lineup for that very first year. And Paul Simon's agent in London contacted Ken and said, "Look, I've got this boy, Ken, and he's quite good, and I think you should put him on because he's just had a single out called I Am a Rock." And he sent the single to Ken, and Ken had a listen to it, and Ken's wife, Joan, told me recently that Ken didn't think too much to it. So he went back to the agent. He said, look, mate, I haven't got any room for him to come on. And the agent said, look, there must be something we can do. It's really important that he has it. You know, he needs a really lovely place to play in England. So Ken brokered a deal with him. And he said, I tell you what I'll do. He said, I'll pay him 15 quid, but then I'll take the 15 quid back and put an ad for his new single in my brochure at the folk festival. So actually, he played for nothing.
He didn't even get the money. That's brilliant.
No, I don't think it even changed hands in the end. But it's the most glorious story. And it's like, you know, so many of the folk songs that are actually sung here, the extraordinary stories that they tell, that's got to be one of the best ones.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you very much, Mandy. I know we'll chat on the programme again tomorrow. And also, you'll be dipping into other programmes around Cambridge 105. And of course, Tuesday morning, your own programme, your own mid-morning show. I know you're going to be playing a lot of the interviews out that you garner over the next couple of days.
Indeed.
Mandy, thank you very much. Mandy Morton at the Cambridge Folk Festival. And by one of those wonderful coincidences, I just happen to have Sinead O'Connor lined up.
The top five records from Cambridge's hottest musicians, as voted for by you.
4 minutes past 6 o'clock on a Thursday night, Thursday afternoon. You never know this time of year, really, do you? It's time to start our entertainment hour. In a short while's time, film and theatre with Sky and Hattie. Ahead of that, we have our regular look at the unsigned chart. In a moment, we'll count down the songs from five down to one. But first, let's check out the new entry this week from Tom Hollingworth. Here's The Sound of High Five.
This is the chart you've been voting for. The Unsigned Chart on 105 Drive.
That's Tom Hollingworth, new entry in the Unsigned chart this week, whose lyric writing I see has been described as both amazing and baffling. You can vote for him or for any other one of the five songs I'm about to run down for you. Week 117 of the Unsigned chart.
The Unsigned chart on Cambridge 105.
Sadly, out goes Venus V. Sorry, lads, but very well done for lasting in the chart for several weeks there. Week 117, then, the new entry we've heard there from Tom Hollingworth, The Sound of High Five. Number 5, Cab Driver, Burning Heart. 4, Tom Lumley, Every Day. 3, The Abstracts, track 13. Long runner on the charts. They're heading towards the 20 weeks there, and I think there'll be a double 20-week holder. I think only Motor Tapes hold that already. And number 2, Ambry Knight. Last week's number 1 was none, which means the number 1 this week is the new entry from last week, Screen People, All Seeing Eyes.
Cambridge's favourite entry this week. This is the Unsigned Chart, number 1.
Darkness from unseeing eyes consumes the endless hate and lies of goodness, will and love. It's the last chance that I have at this, but if it works, it will be bliss. I'll be reborn again. But if it works, you will be missed. You'll be reborn again. But the darkness from your seeing eyes consumes the endless hate and lies of goodness, will and love. But if it works, it will be bliss. They've won, I'll give you that.
Number 1 on the Unsigned chart this week, All Seeing Eyes. It's Screen People, 13 minutes past 6. You can vote in the Unsigned chart by going to the website cambridge105.fm/unsigned chart. We'll keep you posted on how the bands are doing in the Unsigned chart as it stands Monday night as part of the chart hour just after 6. You'll also hear tracks played on 105 Breakfast with Merlin and Becky/Linda, and throughout the day on Cambridge 105. 105. So chart voted for at cambridge105.fm/unsignedchart. Ray LaMontagne of the drive-in movies, which seemed appropriate enough. It's 28 minutes after 6 o'clock. Time to look at film and theatre with Hattie and with Sky. Sky is on mauve and Hattie is on teal.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's good. It's going to be busy out there, you were saying. The traffic because of, surprise, surprise, the folk festival.
Cherry Hinton Road. Quite busy. Took us 20 minutes to get here.
It normally takes you 10.
Yeah, less than.
That's not
on
good.
A good day.
Anyway, you're very welcome nonetheless. And we're going to be doing film to start off with. What are we going to be looking at first?
Ooh, we're going to look up Step Up 5, All In, and also Guardians of the Galaxy. But we'll start off with our dance film. Stars of the previous Step Up films come together for the ultimate incredible dance battle.
There's a magic that happens when you dance. Everything lines up. The world is in sync. And for one perfect moment, you feel totally alive.
Sorry, everyone. Looks like we found what we're looking for.
But everyone knows it's not that easy.
I thought LA was supposed to be the place where dreams actually happen.
It must suck to be hot for 5 minutes and realize that your flash mob ain't nothing but a joke.
Wake up. This crew's not ready for L.A., man.
Welcome to the Vortex. This is the ultimate dance competition with the ultimate prize. The 3-year Vegas contract.
You can't enter alone. So we're putting a crew together or what?
Hell yeah.
What are you doing
what
here?
What do you mean? You're in our new crew. We're going to dance on live television in Vegas, blah, blah, blah. Come on, we'll fill you in the car.
You know, when I was listening through to that clip, I was thinking to myself, well, if Cliff Richard was going to be making a movie, that is the kind of movie that he'd be making today.
Indefinitely.
Particularly with the line in there, hey, let's put the crew together.
Yeah. Oh, my God, I am so excited about this.
He really had your script.
Yeah, I do,
He hasn't stopped talking about it for weeks now.
Sean and his dance crew have been struggling for more than a year to get their break in Hollywood. He soldiers on after everyone else gives up, refusing to abandon his dream. Then he hears of a dance contest in Las Vegas. This could provide the breakthrough he's been looking for as the winners get their own show. Now he needs to assemble a new crew. He teams up with Moose and Andy, recruiting such familiar faces as the Santiago twins and Jenny Kiddo. This stunning spectacle is led by Ryan Guzman from Step Up 4 Miami Heat and Brianna Ivigan from Step Up to the Streets. Brings together nearly a dozen of our favourite dancers from the previous 4 Step Up movies for the showdown to end them all.
Do we have as many as a dozen favourites?
Well, wow. Well, it's been a franchise that obviously...
Oh, you're using the past tense. Okay, this is good already.
Yeah, it's done well to make 5 movies, I guess. I'd like to think it's the last one. It makes it sound like it's the last
one.
Whenever they try and get all the old cast together. But if you like dance, you like performance, then you'll enjoy this film.
It's of a generation, I think. It's, you know, it has a huge appeal to a certain audience.
I'm thinking I'm out of the demographic.
I have a sneaking suspicion you might be, Julian, but I didn't want to be, you know, so presumptuous.
Okay.
You could be on Strictly Come Dancing.
You think I could?
Yes, local could. Celebrity.
Dancing the Tango.
Yeah. Yes! Paso Doble.
Great.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Sort of like spangly stuff.
Can we start a Twitter campaign? Get Julian on Strictly. Hashtag get Julian on Strictly. Let's start tweeting everybody involved in Strictly Come Dancing. Let's make this happen, Cambridge.
I don't know if I like this as an idea.
But, returning to Step Up 5, well, you know what you're getting. So if you're looking forward to that, you can watch it tomorrow because it's out at Cineworld 3D at 20 past 12, 6:15 or 11:30. Or there's also a 2D at 3 o'clock. Or you can see it at Vue on Friday at 4:15 and 6:15. Sorry.
I like that you struggle to read your own writing.
Yeah, I know. It's just numbers, but I think it suddenly baffled me how fewer times are actually there for it, but clearly it's not about the amount of time.
Catch it while you can.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't have time to watch it. I'm out practicing with two-step.
Of course.
Right, so we've got Guardians of the Galaxy to come. That apparently features a raccoon, so it can only improve.
Oh, yes.
Moose in the last one, raccoon in this one. Brilliant. It's 25 minutes before 7. Here's Jefferson Starship. Jane at Cambridge 105 from the Jefferson Starship. I think it must have been one of their early ones branded as Jefferson Starship before it went a bit poppy and Grace Slick got a bit fed up with it, really. It's Cambridge 105 and the Entertainment Hour. Skye and Hattie are here looking at film and theatre, and it's a movie. It's Guardians of the Galaxy, and it's got a raccoon in it.
Yeah, you've sold me on that, just that alone. I mean, I've never heard of Guardians of the Galaxy before watching, like, obviously the Marvel Avengers films, and they alluded to, you know, an evil supervillain out in space. But, like, who else is out there? Well, it's these guys.
If we're going to get out of here, we're going to need to get into that watchtower. And to do that, I'm going to need a few things. The guards wear security bands to control their ins and outs. I need one.
Leave it to me.
That dude there. I need his prosthetic leg.
His leg?
Yeah. God knows I don't need the rest of him. Look at him. He's useless.
All right.
And finally, on the wall back there is a black panel. Blinky yellow light. You see it?
Yeah.
There's a Quarnix battery behind it. Purplish box. Green wires. To get into that watchtower, I definitely need it.
How are we supposed to do that?
Well, supposedly these bald bodies find you attractive, so maybe you can work out some sort of trade.
You must be joking.
No, I've really heard they find you attractive.
Look, it's 20 feet up in the air, and it's in the middle of the most heavily guarded part of the prison. It's impossible to get up there without being seen.
I got one plan, and that plan requires a frickin' Quarnix battery, so figure it out! Can I get back to it? Thanks. Now, this is important. Once the battery is removed, everything is gonna slam into emergency mode. Once we have it, we gotta move quickly. So you definitely need to get that last. Or we could just get it first and improvise.
I'll get the armband.
Leg.
So for the avoidance of doubt, the raccoon was the one who sounded a little bit like Top Cat, for those of you who remember that cartoon. Who was based on who? Do we know the answer? We probably don't, no? Jake, who doesn't have a microphone, is the only person who knows the answer. Sergeant Bilko, very good.
I've only seen the Steve Martin version of that.
Now, the original with Phil Silvers, worth catching. Okay. So, to reviews and raccoons.
Yes, roguish Earthman Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord, has got himself into a whole heap of trouble. He's stolen an orb, which is coveted by villainous psycho Ronan. Ronan will stop at nothing to retrieve the mysterious artifact. This forces our charismatic anti-hero to forge an alliance with an unlikely quartet of rival cosmic outlaws. His crew comprises of Vengeance Crazy Warrior, Drax the Destroyer, gun-toting Rocket the Raccoon, green-skinned deadly assassin Gamora, and the tree-like humanoid Groot. But when Quill learns of the orb's real power, a last-ditch battle for the galaxy ensues. So, yeah, I think this is going to be a nice alternative for those who have had enough of Iron Man and Thor and Hulk. So it's going to take a bit more sci-fi, take it out there, you know. It's not going to be the next Star Wars, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's sort of rebooting the sort of space
opera, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, yeah, so the kind of vein that you see things like Star Wars in and everything, and it's alternative. It's very weird.
I like it. Yes. I have to say that if that clip is anything to go by, it's pretty smart. And what people wouldn't have get, because this is radio, not TV, but there was like a mini fight going on in the background whilst that was speaking, which had nothing really to do with the plot whatsoever until right at the very end of the clip when something a bit more develops. But it's just like subtly going on in the background.
I mean, I think that's the big thing about Marvel is that, you know, they do have fun with their films. You know, their films are funny, they are, you know, reasonably dry. There is an emotional heart to them, and this just makes it bigger, you know? So, yeah, it's going to be really fun.
It's an interesting cast of characters in terms of the acting standpoint. Chris Pratt heading up as Star-Lord. Dave Bautista, former wrestler, but has had a few bit parts
He's done a fair amount of, you know, straight to DVD stuff as well.
But yes, they're using him for his muscle power. Bradley Cooper voicing the raccoon, and I'm sold on the raccoon. I did read one of a comic issue with him in, and it just feels a lot more. It's a lot more tongue in cheek and just humorous.
So, who plays the tree?
The tree. It's voiced by Vin Diesel, but apparently the tree only says three words.
Yep.
Oh, it's like Vin Diesel then, really, isn't it? Good casting.
He says, I am Groot.
And that's all he says, in different ways, but okay, that's basically what he says. So, yeah.
What we could have done was this whole review, just, I am Groot. Yeah.
And Zoe Saldana.
Saldana. We've seen in, oh my gosh, all sorts of stuff lately. She's a bit of a rising star.
Yeah.
So, other than Bradley Cooper, I'd say they're all sort of reasonable underdogs in terms of Hollywood and, you know, leading cast. You know, a lot of them have
been taking a chance.
And I think they're taking a chance on the whole film, really. Mm, you know, it's filled with, you know, not exactly like mainstream humour. It's not going to be totally critics pleasing. So, It's exciting to see that they've branched out in this direction. This is the penultimate film in Marvel's Phase 2.
Yes.
So they're doing sort of sections of
What's the final film in Phase 2?
Next? I think it's the next Avengers, isn't it?
Yeah, they are definitely leading into... this one will touch on a bit of what happened in the end part. Some of the end parts that you've seen, like the end of Thor 2, the end of Avengers Assemble, they've all been alluding to this greater threat, and Guardians of the Galaxy is going to reveal a bit more of that, which will... in turn affect the Avengers and their future development.
But you don't have to have seen all the other films, etc., etc.
No.
You can just go and enjoy it for the raccoons and the trees.
Yeah, from reviews I've heard this is the most standalone of all the films. Like, it can stand on its own as a separate entity
I think that's the thing about the Marvel Universe, is that, you know, you don't have to like every character, you don't have to follow every character's story, but if you're a really big fan of Captain America or just a big fan of Thor, you can follow that sort of train of storyline, and then it all meets together in things like Avengers Assemble, and, you know, and Guardians of the Galaxy is another strand of that. So it's all coming towards sort of one big plot point, and they're just sort of different paths of getting there. So you can follow everything, or you can just like pick one or two of your favourite characters and find your way, which I think is a really exciting thing about the Marvel Universe. You know, it's original, and it's exciting, and it's accessible. So... This is another strand of fun.
Golly gosh. Times, please.
Times. You can catch it tonight in 2D at Cineworld at 9 o'clock, or there's a 3D one an hour before that at 8:05. Viewer showing it at 7:30, 9:30 and 10:50 tonight in 2D, or 3D you can catch at 8:30 and 10:10. So, yes, we'll probably watch it tomorrow night, I think.
Yeah.
That's Rixton, Me and My Broken Heart. 10 minutes away from 7 o'clock, and Ben and Ivan have just arrived. They're bringing us Sonic Delights from 7 tonight. Before that, we're going to turn our attention to matters Greek.
Yes, moving away from the multiplex pop culture, we're going to delve into the classics. That's the drama that only Greek tragedy can conjure up.
Tragedy.
It's as bad as me saying beetroot, isn't
it? Yeah. Oh, dear. So this is Medea at the National Theatre down in London, if you weren't familiar. Medea is a Greek tragedy written by Euripides and has been reasonably contemporized for this performance. Medea is a wife and a mother. For the sake of her husband, Jason, she's left her home and born two sons in exile. But when he abandons his family for a new life, Medea faces banishment and separation from her children. Cornered, she begs for one day's grace. It's time enough. She exacts an appalling revenge and destroys everything she holds dear. So if you're not familiar with Medea, it's quite dark, quite violent, but one of the most amazing characters ever written, especially in terms of female classic female classic female characters. There we go. It is a phenomenal performance.
It was, yes.
The cast is led by Helen McCrory, who has been in all sorts of things, but most notably for me, she played Narcissa Malfoy in Harry Potter. She's an absolutely stunning actress and completely makes the role her own, which is very difficult to do because it's such a heavy and well-known character, and it's absolutely thick with depth and ulterior motives and hidden meaning. And it's one of the most stunning performances.
I'm figuring a lot of people are going to be going to this for the interpretation rather than from the story because they'll be familiar with it.
Yes, yeah. It's I mean, the story is as is. It's just another translation. It's quite a 70s feel to the set. The set is in three pieces. The National Theatre has a sort of a round stage. It's almost
South Bank, isn't it? The National Theatre. So you go presumably to Waterloo, would you, and walk across there.
Yeah, or Temple and walk across the bridge, which is what we did. It's down the road from the Tate Modern and right next door to the South Bank Centre and the Hayward Gallery. The set is, you have a main platform that's like a living room, a very sparse, falling apart.
Peeling wallpaper,
And then there's a top floor which has a sort of corridor room that's used for the wedding that takes place, and underneath that is the woods, which is amazing and has enormous trees and swings, and it's stunning. The whole thing is stunning all the way through. There wasn't a weak link in the cast. It was beautiful. They used movement really well as well with the chorus, which is always a very difficult part of the play to handle. But it was done really well. It was a chorus of women, the women of Corinth, and they were a complete mixture of ages and all sorts. And they got progressively more mad, if you like, as the play went on as well.
And you see that evolving, as unwinding, as it were.
Yes, absolutely. And you see Medea unwinding until she commits the most heinous act of all, which, you know, spoilers.
But Helen McCrory's embodiment of a scorned woman, conflicted about how to gain back some control over her life and to take revenge on, you know.
Yeah, she's led to, you know, the ultimate extreme.
And yeah,
spoilers.
It's definitely one for debate. Like, can you, as such a complex, and, you know, at the end of the day, she is a villain, but
Is she justified?
Yes, that's it. Is she?
Is she a villain, or is she forced
pushed to the brink of madness?
Yeah. It was one of the most amazing productions I've seen. The soundtrack was fantastic as well. That was written by Goldfrapp.
Is the music live, or
some of it is live? It completely ties together perfectly. It's only 90 minutes long. There's no interval. It's in the Olivier Theatre, which is the biggest theatre in the National Theatre. Yes, it's absolutely well worth seeing if you like a good hard hitting drama that you'll come out of and just be talking about it for hours. Then you should absolutely go
That'll
and
be
see
the one.
This. Take the train journey down to London and check it out. It's very quick to get there. We got there in about an hour and a half.
That's relatively straightforward, isn't it? It's about 50 minutes platform down on the Northern Line, I suppose, from King's Cross.
King's Cross, or if you go into Liverpool Street, then it's just a circle.
Ran on the Circle Line to the Temple, then you can walk across the bridge.
Yeah. So it's playing at the National Theatre through until Thursday the 4th of September. Most performances at 7:30 p.m. and then matinees on Wednesday the 6th, Wednesday the 13th, and Saturday the 23rd, and Saturday the 30th of July. No, August. Which is tomorrow. It's also being played out as part of National Theatre Live, Live and Last. So the last performance will be played out in cinemas. So it will be coming to Cambridge View, the Arts Picture House, and Cineworld as well. That's on Thursday, the 4th of September. The Arts Picture House will also be doing encores on Thursday, the 11th of September, and Tuesday, the 16th. And I absolutely urge people to go and see this. Mm. It is a superb production and phenomenal performances. And yeah, it was really good.
Enjoyed it, I can tell.
Very much so. And so did my mum. Hey, mum, if you're listening. She probably won't be, but she might catch the podcast.
I think we need to bring your mother in here one week, actually. That could be.
She would love it.
I might regret that that offer. What's happening locally at the moment?
Elsewhere around Cambridge, it's all very quiet at the moment. This is dark season for theatres because everybody goes away to find the sunshine. But elsewhere around Cambridge, in September, Tuesday the 7th of September is Much Ado About Nothing at the ADC Theatre, which is...
Always a fun Shakespeare play.
It is, and it's the European Theatre Group. Cambridge American Stage Tour, who are doing this one. And they're a fantastic group. And then at the Arts Theatre, again, it's, you know, dark month, so... there's not too much happening at the moment, but coming up in the future, we've got Dreamboats and Petticoats, which will be lovely. Always good fun. Therese Rackan as well is coming in September, which I'm very excited about. There's a film coming out, a film adaptation coming out soon as well. And also Much Ado About Nothing, which is the Globe on tour. So, you know, decide which one you'd...
That's pretty good. Lots to look forward to in the future. Cambridge Shakespeare Festival, of course, is on at the moment,
indeed,
isn't it? So it's scattered hither and thither around the city.
Yes, check the website for local listings.
That's what we do. Okay, guys, thank you very much. Enjoy your weekend.
You
thank
too. You.
Movie choice, what's your sort of pick for what's out there at the moment? You can go for one of the ones we reviewed this week. Definitely Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
And Madea.
With the raccoon, I guess. thanks very much. Sky and Hattie back with us next Thursday, part of the Entertainment Hour, which we do from 6 o'clock onwards.